I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. We've been through a lot in the last 2 years of the pandemic, which led to 20 million layoffs in 2020. That was the worst of the economic crisis, and now millions of those laid off workers are employed. In fact, 6.6 million new jobs were created during President Biden's first year in office, with wages rising almost 6%. Almost 500,000 jobs were created last month, and retail sales surged 3.8% in January. Now we're dealing with the highest inflation rate since 1982. No doubt you've had to pay more for food and electricity and rent, among other goods and services. The focus is on the Federal Reserve and what it will do, if anything, to rein in inflation without hurting the rest of the economy. Joining us is Patrick Harker. He is president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia. Patrick Harker, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for asking me to be here, Mark.
Absolutely. A lot of moving parts, but let's focus on inflation. Are you and other economists at the Federal Reserve, were you surprised at the inflation rate, 7.5% for the last 12 months? Does that surprise you?
So we knew it was going to be high, and it was going to be high because of the fundamentals of what drives inflation. And so now we weren't completely surprised. It was a little higher than I anticipated, but it was not out of bounds of what we thought might happen.
And are we talking essentially, when you boil it down, supply and demand, short supply, big demand?
Yeah. I mean, we added a lot to the economy, and appropriately so. I mean, we added over $4.5 trillion to this economy during the pandemic to prop up the economy. We also switched from services to goods. We're going to slowly switch back as things open up. So there's clearly a demand issue. There's a lot of money, and people had the ability to purchase things. And then there's absolutely supply issues. I tried to go to my favorite Jersey diner Monday morning. I was going to sneak in there for breakfast. It was closed.
Wow.
Why was it closed? They didn't have enough people to work on a Monday.
And
so there's supply chain issues, there's labor issues, no question.
And who would you say overall, when you look at Americans, who are the hardest hit by this rate of inflation, even if it's the short term?
As always, it's people who are lower income. I mean, because they are consuming much more of their income on things like food and energy.
Do you think inflation, we're talking about 7.5% over the last 12 months, do you think inflation has either sort of landed at that spot? Do you think it's going to get higher? Do you think it's going to get lower if the Fed even does nothing?
No, first, we are going to do something. We are going to act at the Fed. I'm strongly of that opinion. But given that, we do anticipate that inflation will start to come down as the supply issues start to be resolved, both whether it's the goods or getting people back to work. As those resolve, we'll be able to bring inflation down. And also the spending that came from the federal government is starting to dissipate. And so that will have less and less of an effect as well.
So what should the Fed do to address this high inflation rate?
So again, go back to what's driving inflation, demand issues, supply issues. We don't really have tools to address the supply issues directly. There's some indirect work we do through our community development function, but directly through monetary policy, we don't really affect that too much, getting people back to work, getting the ships loaded and unloaded. But we can affect demand, and we do that by raising interest rates. And so we do plan, I think, I am very supportive of starting a process of raising the Fed funds rate, the federal funds rate, which is our primary tool of monetary policy, start to raise that. And I would be supportive of, as early as March, a 25 basis point increase in that rate.
What does that mean when you say 25 basis point?
Yeah.
What does that mean in ways that us consumers can understand?
So a quarter of percent of our very short-term interest rate. That's the rate that the banks lend to each other overnight. But that affects all the other rates. And what's already started to happen is financial markets look in anticipation of what's going to happen, right? And so in this case, they've already looked at what we will most likely do, which will be starting a process of raising the very short-term rate. And it's having an effect on things like 30-year mortgage rates. So 30-year mortgage rates have gone up a lot. That will tend to cool off the housing market. It'll tend to cool off other markets as well, because people, it'll cost more to lease a car or to purchase a car or to purchase a home.
That does, though, have an impact on consumers and their wallet. If they're going to be ending up paying more for a car, these are big purchase items, more for a car, for instance.
Right. And this is really where we need to walk a fine line at the Fed. We need to do what we need to do to curb inflation, but not overreact and possibly dampen an economy that in some ways is doing very well. If you look at the unemployment rate, very low. In fact, in Philadelphia, the Philadelphia area, we are below the unemployment rate in February of 2020. Mm. And so we've more than made up for, in terms of the unemployment rate, the pandemic. But there's still a lot of underlying problems we have in the economy that we had before the pandemic hit. I know it's hard to remember what life was like before the pandemic.
Indeed.
But we had very tight labor markets then as well. We had problems of particularly low-income people having access to good-paying jobs. So those things haven't gone away. In fact, they've accelerated through this pandemic. And that's the work we need to get back to.
Well, in fact, I mentioned the fact that wages up something like 5-6% over the last year or so. Can we address the problem of inflation without hurting those people, especially more low-income people that really depend on that money?
Yeah, so we've had good raises. So we've seen, particularly at the lower income levels, we've seen salary increases go up pretty substantially, but they've not necessarily kept pace with inflation. That's why we need to bring inflation down. Our target for inflation is 2%. That is the Fed's target. We'd like to get back down to that and possibly go a little below that for a while, just to try to average 2% over a period of time. That creates stability. It's stability in prices, and then people don't have to worry so much about paying for their groceries and paying for energy.
And when you look into your crystal ball, when do you see that 2% number? When do you see that on the horizon?
It's going to take a couple of years. So this year, we'll probably, in 22, we'll probably be north of 3.5% inflation average for the year. Then coming down over time to maybe 2.5% the year out, and then in 2024, we'll hit 2%. It's going to take some time. What has surprised me, and I think most economists, is how disruptive the pandemic has been to supply chains. You just can't find computer chips. You can't find lots of things. And that surprised us of how fragile our global economic system is. Now, we had a glimpse of that. Remember the ship that got stuck in the Suez
Canal? I sure do, yes.
Right. One ship in one canal disrupted global commerce. Imagine that. Multiply that across the whole economy with the pandemic. That's what we're dealing with right now, trying to bring back this global economy to life.
Well, I'm also thinking about the truck protests in Canada and what happened to that one bridge between Detroit and I forget what city it is in Canada. What happened to the auto industry?
Yeah, so the fragility of our supply chains, the fragility of our economic system is something that I think we need to work on. This goes back to my old academic work when I was at Wharton. We need to really create more resilient supply chains, a more resilient economy in a whole host of ways. And that's a challenge for both companies and for the public sector to address together.
Here's an email from Ron. The Fed engaged in a process called quantitative easing, putting a lot of money into circulation. Isn't that another cause of inflation, Patrick Harker?
So sure, in the sense that we added money to the economy. So quantitative easing is a way for us to add money to the economy. What we essentially do is we purchase treasury notes and mortgage-backed securities from banks, and then we give them cash, and that adds money. So we are stopping that process. Next month, we will finish our asset purchases. That is, we will stop adding money to the economy. Then we'll start a process, once we get interest rates above a certain amount, then we'll start the process of actually shrinking what we own, the balance sheet, as we call it, and start to really even reduce further some of the money that's in the economy.
I predict the stock market's going to go crazy because they have been dependent. They meaning, and these, of course, are a lot of people that own stocks, seem to react whenever the Fed makes noises about raising the interest rates.
Right. So what we need to do, and what I think we're all committed to doing, is early and often keep saying it what we're going to do so we don't surprise anyone. We don't want any surprises. So I think it's very clear the path we're on in terms of policy. We will be raising interest rates. We will be reducing the size of our balance sheet. But we want to do that in a very methodical way. That is not surprising anyone.
And how much, I mean, you kind of referenced this, but we've been dealing with this pandemic economy. How much do you think masking policies and vaccine rates have had an impact on our overall economy?
Well, again, I think the broader issue is the actual virus itself, right? And it's had an absolutely devastating effect on our economy. As we begin to reopen the economy, then it closes down. We reopen, it closes down in certain sectors. And you look at something like childcare, the challenge that people have of just finding affordable childcare. And part of that is the childcare providers can't find the workers. And they have to keep opening and closing. And you see that in the data. If you look at labor force participation rates, men have pretty much come back, prime age men, sort of 25 to 54, they've come back to where they were. Women haven't to the same extent. And the big culprit for that, is when you look at underneath the hood of that data, is really childcare and the fear of not being able to somebody take care of my child.
And we also know that childcare workers often are among the lowest paid workers in our economy.
Sure. Yeah. And so we've actually conducted a project with the Greater Philadelphia Chamber, but also more specifically with the Delaware Chamber of Commerce and with a leading foundation down there and the state on coming up with some creative solutions, public-private partnerships to address this childcare crisis. Because businesses know they need to address it,
right,
or they're not going to have the workers they need to run their business at all.
I want to squeeze in one more question. Almost no time to answer it. Patrick Harger from Avi says, is it possible to raise taxes on wealthy individuals and corporations, and would that affect inflation?
So we don't address the fiscal policy side of the house. That's really Congress and state legislatures. And so in the case of raising taxes, if there's an effect, it's not direct. The direct effect on inflation is really controlling demand. And the main thing we need to do with controlling demand, our main tool, is the interest rates that we have in the economy.
Well, I appreciate you joining us today on Radio Times, getting our conversation started. Patrick Harger, thanks so much.
Thanks, Marty.
You're welcome. And he is president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia. And economist Mark Zandi is waiting in the wings. We'll be talking more about the various gyrations in the U.S. economy. We want to hear from you. Email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. And stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Marty Moscoen, and today on Radio Times, what's up with the U.S. economy? I was just talking with Philadelphia Federal Reserve President Patrick Harger about what the Fed should do about inflation, which is at the highest rate in 40 years. On the other hand, there has been strong job growth in the last year. Wages are up almost 6%, although inflation is taking a bite out of that increase, whether at the supermarket, the gas pump, or when paying for electricity, among other goods and services. Those at the lower end of the income scale are really feeling the pinch. Meanwhile, 4.5 million people left their jobs in November. Retail spending surged in January. The stock market is all over the place, with huge swings sometimes over the course of a day. And the conflict between Ukraine and Russia, the truck protests in Canada, have only added to the economic uncertainty. Well, here to address all of this is Mark Zandi. He is chief economist at Moody's Analytics. And Mark, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty. Good to be with you.
News, nice to have you with us. Let me just make sure our listeners could join us because there is so much to talk about. Again, you can email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can pick up the phone and give us a call. That phone number, 1-888-477-9499. Mark, we heard Patrick Harker say, yes, the Fed will raise interest rates a small percent, but nonetheless a raise in the month of March. What do you make of that?
Makes sense. The economy is growing strongly. Unemployment is 4% and falling fast, so pretty close to full employment. Inflation is high, and you know there's been some down days in the stock market, but generally stock prices are very high. House prices are very, very high. So you take a step back and take a look at how things are going. You say, well, it doesn't make sense that interest rates are close to zero. They being the Fed, needs right. to normalize interest rates.
And what would normal be from your perspective?
Well, I think at this point, it's very likely they'll raise the federal funds rate, the rate they control, by a quarter percentage point at the March meeting, and then do one quarter point hike at each.
You know what?
We the subsequent.
Yeah, Mark, I got to jump in here only because we have your audio is going in and out. And we got to fix that. And we will do that. Let me just quickly tell you, our listeners, what we are talking about. We are talking about the fact that the U.S. economy feels like it's all over the place. The stock market is up and down. Jobs are up. In fact, the economy added nearly a million jobs in January. Consumer confidence, though, is at a 10-year low. And we just learned this morning that retail sales surged something like 3.8% in January. So there is a lot going on in the stock, in the U.S. economy, and we are talking with Mark Zandi to try to figure out how to make sense of where all the pieces, the puzzle pieces of our economy, how they all fit together. And again, you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. And we want to know the impact of the economy on you. In fact, Moody's Analytics came out with some information in the last couple of days that the average American family is paying $276 more a month, which I did the math. It's a little more than $3,000 a month related to inflation. If that sounds like you, we want to make sure that we can hear from you as well. And again, email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always give us a call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. And we are hoping to get Mark Zandi up so that we can talk to him, because I am no economist, although we all live in this economy and we all live in the kind of uncertainty of the economy. And as we had heard from Patrick Harker, how interconnected we all are. When that ship got stuck in the Suez Canal, that had international reverberations. So we are living in a very interconnected world. What happens halfway around the world certainly affects us here in the United States. And it looks like we have Mark Zandi joining us by phone. And Mark, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Well, hopefully this works, Marty. I'm so sorry.
No, that's okay. It's just I am no economist. And so, and we have a lot of people with a lot of questions for you. And
yeah,
I forget exactly where we left off. But let me just I mention this to our listeners. I saw from Moody's that the average family is paying $276 more a month. I'm assuming that's related to inflation. Can you flesh that out for us, Mark?
Yeah, absolutely. So because of the acceleration in inflation over the past year, so if you go back a year ago, inflation was just south of 2%. Now it's over 7.
Right.
So that acceleration has added about $275 a month to what people need to spend to buy the same amount of things, the same stuff that they were buying a year ago. So, you know, for the typical family who makes $65,000, $70,000 a year, that's kind of the median income across the country. Half the people make more than that, half less. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, that really does bite into people's purchasing power, and it stings, and that's why people are just feeling really crummy about all this, and rightfully so.
Well, and I did the math. It's a little more than $3,000, which is a good chunk of change. Does that explain, Mark, why consumer confidence is down?
Yeah, that's a big part of it. I mean, obviously, the pandemic has got people really just on edge. I mean, even if everything else was going well in the economy, we were at full employment and inflation was, you know, where everyone feels comfortable with it, we'd still, I think, feel pretty bad. So I think the sentiment surveys reflect that. But then you throw into the mix it's been a tough 2 years. I mean, unemployment until recently is very high, and now we're dealing with this very, very high inflation. So it just feels like one thing after the next, and that just wears people down. And sentiment is very low. In fact, by some measures, some survey measures, it's lower than it's been in the entire period of the pandemic, which is just gives you a sense of how people, how crummy people are feeling.
Is that a kind of sort of learned helplessness that just sort of feeling like, you know, especially if you have, you meaning people have, they wear masks, they've gotten a vaccine, you know, they've done all the things that they're supposed to do, and yet it feels like we're not where we're supposed to be.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, a real disappointment. I mean, think back about this time last year, the vaccines were getting rolled out, and I think there was a lot of optimism that, well, this thing was over.
Yeah.
Maybe it would come around again, but certainly not the way it did. And you can even remember President Biden giving a speech around July 4th saying, hey, go enjoy the families, and it's Freedom Day. And, you know, so I think there was just widespread expectations that we were off and running here. The pandemic was in the rearview mirror. But no such luck. You know, Delta hit us really hard back in the fall, and then, of course, Omicron. And so I think that disappointment, that surprise is really hard for us to digest psychologically, obviously.
Let me ask Sue's question. I also had a similar question about when we look at the inflation rate, are we also seeing evidence of greed? Stu says Chipotle, 26% profit increase. Starbucks, 31% profit increase. McDonald's, 95% profit increase going on from there. He says CEOs getting immense raises. Is it inflation or supply chain problems? He says it's 100% corporate greed. Do you agree, Mark?
No. I mean, there's a long list of reasons why inflation is high as it is. And the number one reason at the top of the list, is the pandemic and the disruptions to supply chains and labor markets and the energy market. So it goes right back to the Delta wave and the Omicron wave, just disrupting things. That's far and away the most important reason for the high inflation. Businesses are able to pass through their higher costs, their higher input costs, or higher labor costs, so they are doing that. And so their profit margins are, you know, as wide as they've been. So they're able to pass through. There may be, you know, some cases out there where a business or businesses or maybe even an industry is, taking advantage of the situation and raising prices more aggressively. But, you know, that's, something important for the federal government to focus on. I mean, that's part of a government's job to make sure that businesses don't so-called gouge when we're in a time of crisis. And, you know, you can feel like the administration is kind of on the case, right? They're talking about the meat packing industry and the energy industry, and is trying to keep the focus and the light shining here so that the businesses stay honest. So I think that's reasonable to do. But in the grand scheme of things, I don't think this is that's playing a big role here, no.
And that is Mark Zandi, chief economist at Moody's Analytics. We're talking with him about a whole host of things, including the inflation rate, what the Federal Reserve looks like it is going to do, the impact of the coronavirus pandemic on the overall economy. And again, we always want to hear from you. Email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Mark, Paul has a question. He says, is the stock market overvalued? Will it crash? Will interest rates on a 10-year CD ever allow us aging baby boomers to retire? What do you say to Paul?
Yeah, a lot to digest there. I do think the stock market is overvalued. It has, risen a lot over an extended period of time. In fact, last year in 2021, the stock market was up almost 30%. That's a big increase in a very short period of time. And there are signs of, you know, froth in the market, or there was until this recent correction that we've gotten into. You know, meme stock. I'm not going to, unless you want to talk about it, things like meme stocks, you remember GameStop, SPACs, initial public offerings. You know, these are all the symptoms of a market that is overvalued, frothy. You know, valuations should be high because interest rates are low, but as interest rates rise, and, you know, President Harker made it clear that interest rates are rising, you know, valuations should come in. That means stock prices should come in. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a bit bumpy for stocks, you know, here, you know, as we all digest the higher interest rates and valuations come in and some of the froth in the market comes out. So, you know, there'll be up days, there'll be down days. The market goes up and down and all around, you know, obviously. But I think generally we'll have some down days here. So I wouldn't count on big stock returns in the near future, which does lead to the other part of the question about retirement nest eggs. You know, actually, retirement nest eggs have increased quite a bit, mostly for middle and higher income households during the pandemic because they weren't traveling, they weren't going to restaurants and ball games, so they were saving. So nest eggs rose. And then, of course, we saw big increases in stock prices. We saw surging housing values. I don't know about you, Marty, but if I look on Zillow from my home
in
the suburbs of Philly, it's up a lot. So, you know, we're in a pretty good spot generally. I mean, I'm painting with a broad brush. But, you know, one thing where retirees or folks preparing for retirement have not benefited is these low rates. You can't put it into a CD or some kind of cash like, you know, investment and expect to make any kind of return. Well, that's going to change here a little bit as interest rates start to rise. But that's not where people have kind of saved their money, put their money, or where they've gotten those gains to help build their retirement nest egg. It's been stocks and housing. And, you know, of course, there's some folks out there that have been investing in crypto, which I wouldn't.
Oh, Lordy. Yeah, we keep talking about doing a show about crypto. And I keep saying, I don't understand. You know, I can't do a show about something that I don't understand. Mark, let me just toss a question related. Kathy says, she says older people are being squeezed from all sides. No one thinks about people over the age of 70. What do you say to Kathy?
I'm sorry, Marty. Could you repeat that?
Oh, sure. She says older people are being squeezed from all sides. No one thinks about people who are over 70 years old. You agree?
It's tough to be 70, over 70, not on a fixed income and with inflation, you know, where it is today. And I know lawmakers and policymakers, and of course, the folks at the Fed are really focused on trying to get that inflation rate back down and, you know, get to the other side of the pandemic. And that would benefit everybody, including older Americans, including those over 70. So, I don't think that's the case. I mean, I think everyone's, like, for example, working really hard to make sure the Social Security there is there for retirees in the future and, you know, make sure that their retirement and then more benefits for health care. So, I don't think older Americans are being singled out in some way for not getting the kind of support that the government provides. The other thing I'd point out, I think it's important, is the government has provided tremendous support during the pandemic. I mean, if you look at all of the different programs and policies that have been put in place over the past couple of years, it amounts to about $5 trillion. In support, that's 25% of GDP, and that goes to all Americans, and that's been very supportive, and that's unprecedented. So, no, I don't think that's the case. I understand I sympathize with the financial situation, particularly because of this high inflation, but I don't think that older Americans are being left behind here. Certainly not on purpose.
Well, let me pick up on that $5 trillion, which was obviously spent to keep the economy afloat and to help all those people laid off. And what we saw was that child poverty was reduced by a dramatic amount. And now we're seeing some of that money is going away. Are we sort of going to go back to our bad old ways?
Yeah, it's unfortunate about the child tax credit. That's what you're referring to. That was a real benefit to a lot of lower middle income households that they would get cash every month, and that was something they were getting through all throughout last year. It ended in January. You know, the President Biden wanted to extend the child tax credit to let that continue on, but that has fallen through. He hasn't been able to get that piece of legislation, the Build Back Better legislation, through Congress. and therefore that has expired. And I do think that's unfortunate because, you know, that money is going to households that are very, very stressed, particularly in the current environment, and it goes to children. And it has gotten lots of children out of poverty and has been very beneficial. So hopefully, you know, that comes back around, you know, when the politics get to the right place and we, you know, get to a better place where, you know, we can get some things through Congress, because I think there is a lot of support for that particular piece of legislation because it is so helpful to children, getting them out of poverty.
Indeed. I was reading, Mark, about some thoughts about suspending the federal gas tax in order to reduce the cost of filling up the car or the truck at the pump. I think it's something like 18%. Does that make sense to you?
You know, that's a real stopgap measure, Marty. I don't, there's the problem is here with this inflation, there's no kind of smoking gun, you know, slam dunk, let's do this and it will solve our problem immediately. It really goes back to the pandemic. We just have to get to the other side of the pandemic. But, you know, that doesn't help people in the here and now, and lawmakers really, you know, beyond frustrated to figure out what to do about this and how to help. And there's a long list of, you know, ideas and suggestions. And, you know, if you kind of lay out the list, I'd say if I had to pick one, it would probably be that, you know, suspend the gas tax, the federal gasoline tax for a period of time, because that's where a lot of people are really suffering. You know, they're paying, you know, $3.50 for a gallon of regular unleaded. That's up a buck from where it was a year ago. So, you know, that would provide some relief. But, you know, that's just a very stopgap, not going to really make a big deal, you know, for lots of folks for very long. So I don't know that I'd go down that path at this point. I'd start focusing on things that might help us that really will help us in a more sustained way longer run. So, for example.
Well, you know what, Mark? If you don't mind, just hold on to that thought because we're up on a break and I will pick up on that after a very short break. And that's Mark Zandi. He's chief economist at Moody's Analytics, and we called him up to join us on Radio Times to talk about the U.S. economy, which is complicated, to say the least. And we want to hear from you. Email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with economist Mark Zandi about the U.S. economy. Inflation is up. The stock market is up and down. The economy added nearly 500,000 jobs in January, and yet consumer confidence hit a 10-year low. Mark, you were talking about sort of, if not the gas tax, reducing or lowering the gas tax, that we need to think, in a more structural ways about how to address the economy and flesh this out for us.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. You know, I think one of the biggest problems we have, and this isn't going to go away fast, and this was developing even before the pandemic, is housing. We just have a very severe shortage of affordable homes. The vacancy rate for rental or for homeownership is pretty close to as low as it's ever been, and the amount of homes that are being built is still not quite where it needs to be to meet just the demand that, you know, we have every year. So I think we need to focus policies on trying to increase the supply of homes, affordable housing, to get rent growth down to something that's more, you know, sustainable and tolerable. I mean, and just to give you a sense of it, for the typical American household, they spend one third of their budget on housing. So, you know, this is the area where I think we would, you know, reap a lot of benefit if we focused on that as a policy solution. So, you know, these near term fixes, I don't know. I don't know if they bias very much and help, and certainly don't help for very long. But so I think we need to spend our policy efforts on things that are going to benefit us and keep the cost of living down in the longer run.
Well, longer run, it takes what, a year or two to build a house, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And that's a great point. I mean, even if you pass those policies today, and, you know, tax credits, and there's different programs that could be, you know, funded to, you know, increase the supply of affordable housing, it's not going to be a solution for next month or even, you know, mid this year. It's probably going to start reaping benefits by this time next year. And, you know, just to give you a sense of the complexity of all this, I mean, all this conflates with those supply chain problems we were talking about, right? Because a lot of the shortages are in building materials. I mean, think about lumber. You know, that was kind of the poster child for supply chain disruptions back when this all started. But that, you know, you have problems with plumbing fixtures and, you know, different types of materials and appliances. And, you know, just to, because of all of that, it just adds to the length of time it's going to take to build homes. But again, going back to the pandemic.
Let me read a couple of comments from our listeners. One from Trenton: I believe a third of inflation is due to price gouging in gas, meat, shipping prices. There's been too much attention on inflation by the media. The economy is doing great for me and a lot of people, but the liberal news media likes to focus only on those struggling the most. And we wanted to do the show because of all the pieces of the economy and how to sort of understand its impact, which is disparate. I mean, if people are well off and they've been able to keep their jobs and they have money in the stock market, they are doing really well. But Mark, we can't forget the people at the other end who are paying, you know, $275 more a month for their cost of living.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sympathetic to the view that, look, we've come a long way pretty faster since the pandemic hit. I mean, the pandemic hit us, a couple of years ago. And if you think back 2 years ago, unemployment was 15%. Mm-hmm. And now we're down to 4. We're creating lots of jobs. And we're going to be back to unemployment rates that we saw pre-pandemic here, certainly by the end of the year. And we talked about the savings and we talked about, you know, the stock prices and housing values. So, you know, from that perspective, from the perspective of jobs, from the perspective of people's wealth, we've done well. Surprisingly well. I mean, I think it's been quite an achievement. But, you know, we still haven't, it's definitely not mission accomplished, right? Because, a 7.5% inflation, and that's the inflation rate we're suffering right now.
Right.
That's a problem, and we can't sustain that, and that will undermine the rest of the economy at some point if we don't solve it or address it or get it back down. So, you know, we're definitely come a long, long way. We should be proud of, you know, of that, and again, quite an achievement. But we still got more to do here. And you know, the 7.5% inflation hits people of different income means differently. I mean, if you're a high income household, you know, it's not that big a deal. You've saved a lot of money. This kind of inflation for a year or two is, you know, you can manage it. No, it's not going to be a problem for you. You're not going to change anything you do because of it. But for lower income households, you know, folks that are, you know, in the bottom third half of the income distribution, this matters, right? They have to make hard choices. You know, what do I, if I have to pay more for my food or to fill my gas tank or pay for my child's care, you know, that means I have less to spend on everything else, and I don't have a lot to spend. So, you know, from that perspective, we're still not where we need to be.
Let me ask you about what's called the Great Resignation. I forget how many people have left their jobs. I did see that at least in the month of November, 4.5 million people left their jobs. I'm assuming they went to other jobs, or maybe they decided, you know, I'm going to hold out for better pay, or I'm going to do something else. What does the Great Resignation tell us about the U.S. economy, and perhaps even tell us about how Americans feel about their jobs and the economy?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously very difficult for businesses trying to navigate all the people that are quitting their jobs and moving to others. It's difficult to manage a business when, you know, you don't know what you're who you're going to have, you know, on the job. But from a broader perspective, certainly from a worker perspective, it's probably a pretty good thing, right? I mean, people are leaving jobs they don't like for some reason. You know, maybe they don't like the pay, they don't like the hours, they don't like the boss, they don't like the commute, and they're finding jobs that are better. I mean, quits are high, but so are hires. Hires are even higher, and that's why we're getting all this job growth. So people are kind of taking this as an opportunity to kind of find a better situation, a job situation. Of course, remote work has also entered into the discussion here as well. People, workers really like remote work, and you know, employers like it. Some like it, some don't. It's a little bit more mixed, but I think that's also contributing to all this, because people say, hey, you know, I can do my job as efficiently, if not more efficiently, from, you know, somewhere else. I don't need to be in the office. And if you can't, Mr. or Ms. Employer, you know, provide that opportunity to me, I'm going to go find another job. And so the opportunity of remote work is also, you know, playing a role here, too. I think there's a lot of reasons behind the high level of quits. And, you know, I think it depends on your, you know, where your vantage point, whether it's a good thing or bad thing. But I think at the end of the day, you know, cutting across the economy, what's happening now will probably land all of us in a better place.
I should add that we're going to be talking about remote work tomorrow on Radio Times. Just picking up on what Mark Zandi was talking about. Here's an email from Tuber. And I have to say, Mark, a lot of people think there's a lot of greed going on and that is playing a role in driving the inflation rate. Tuber says, I believe that although other factors do play a role in a very complex machine, our economy is price gouging and taking the chance to raise prices is the main, if not the only cause of inflation in the United States. I mean, some of our listeners are just not convinced by you.
I hear you. And I'm sure you can find examples, anecdotes that just don't feel quite right. And we do know that in times of crisis, I mean, a hurricane would be a good example. You know, you find businesses that take advantage, of the situation because they're selling something that is in short supply or, you know, they've got market power. But, of course, I'm looking at data, kind of looking across the economy. And the one thing I look at to gauge whether we have widespread gouging or, people just greed is looking at businesses' profit margins. That's the difference between the price they charge and the costs that they have, the labor costs, the rental costs. They're paying more for the things that they're buying, right? I mean, it's not like they're not facing inflation at two. If you look at those margins, they're good. They're very wide, but they're no wider than they were. So it doesn't seem to indicate, that we're seeing widespread, gouging here. I don't think that's the case. Again, I'm sure you can find a case, so-called anecdote, but I don't think that's broad based at this point. But I'll reiterate, having said that, I think it's really important that the federal government shine a light on businesses and markets that potentially are taking advantage of the situation so that, there is transparency here, because if there's transparency, it makes it a lot more difficult for businesses to take advantage. So I think it's important. That's part of federal government's job, right?
Sure.
To make sure that businesses are playing by the rules, and, gouging is not playing by the rules. So I think that's important that they do that.
And a comment from Jack saying, he's an older person and he is struggling to make ends meet. And that is also, Mark, a reality out there and needs to be addressed in one form or another. And again, we are talking about the U.S. economy, all the moving parts, all the puzzle pieces. And our guest is economist Mark Zandi. And we want to hear from you. We got just a couple more minutes left. You can email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can give us a call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Mark, as you mentioned, we have shoveled about $5 trillion into the U.S. economy over the last 2 years. Do we need to worry about debt and deficit?
I think we need to focus on that, Marty. I mean, I do think spending the $5 trillion was critical, absolutely necessary. And again, it led to this amazing achievement of coming back quickly from this very devastating, unprecedented pandemic. So I think it was critical that we do it. And we had the ability to do it. But here we are now after all of this, and the economy is back. Inflation is now high, and our debt load is high. So, I would argue that going forward, any policy that is proposed that raises government spending or cuts taxes, either needs to be paid for one way or the other. So, when President Biden puts forward the Build Back Better agenda and he has a proposal to reinstate the child tax credit, I think that's good policy. But I also think it needs to be paid for. And I would, in this case, President Biden has proposed raising taxes on large multinational corporations to pay for it. And I think that's entirely appropriate at this point, and particularly going forward, because of the, we did take down $5 trillion in debt and added significantly to our debt load. And I do think that's, an issue now going forward.
But looking at our very divided U.S. Congress, do you see that getting any traction, the idea of raising taxes even on wealthy corporations?
Well, it has. I mean, actually, I think 49 Democratic senators say I'm on board with that idea. You have one senator. In this case, I think it's, we've been picking on poor Joe Manchin from West Virginia. But in this case, I think it's Chris Sinema from Arizona who's not supportive. Although, she hasn't really been pushed to say that, explicitly and publicly. So I suspect if, policymakers could come forward with a package of proposals that, those 50 senators could agree on, you get the votes, you get it through. But, obviously is razor thin, right? That's 50 Democratic votes and the 50 Republican senators aren't going to vote for it. You can only get it through Congress into legislation through a kind of an arcane, legislative process. So it shows you how divided we are. But we could do it, and, we're not that far away from it. So it doesn't feel like that's going to happen, here anytime soon. But, this is Washington. Things happen.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Sometimes, exactly. I wonder, though, looking at the U.S. economy, are other similar countries dealing with the same issues that we are, Mark?
Yeah, they are. Exactly. It's a great point. If you look across the world, depends on the country and the policy, but they're now dealing with these high rates of inflation. In most cases, not as quite as high as our rates of inflation for lots of different reasons that we could go into if you'd like. But they're up. Go take a look at inflation in Europe, the UK, Germany. Look across the emerging markets, even in Asia, you see higher rates of inflation, not in China, not in Japan, but in most other parts of the world. And that just goes to the point that the primary reason for the high rates of inflation, the uncomfortably high rates of inflation we're suffering through right now, is the pandemic and the problems that, it created in supply chains and labor markets and energy markets. And of course that, affects the entire globe, not just here in the United States. So, yeah, the same kind of ills that we're suffering here, economic ills, same kind of problems where most other parts of the world are, in the same boat. They're struggling through the same things.
I mentioned this to Patrick Harker, but, the truck protests in Ottawa, it was such a sort of fascinating, illuminating look at how connected we are to Canada's economy, and what happens there affects us here and vice versa.
Yeah, I mean, and we are very connected. I mean, you could see that the Delta wave, that did a lot of damage here. But, the thing that really caused the havoc for the global economy, it really nailed Asia, China and particularly Southeast Asia. At that point, Southeast Asia was very lightly vaccinated, and they had all these supply chains begin there, in that part of the world. And, if a Malaysian semiconductor plant has to shut down because of Delta, that means then U.S., German, Japanese automakers can't get the chips they need. They can't produce their cars, their shortages. And therefore, prices go skyward. And that's exactly what we saw. And so that just shows you how interconnected we are. And when you have something, a global shock like a pandemic, by definition, that's a global event. It's a problem and it reverberates, back on us. Interestingly enough, we are very open to the rest of the world, but we're less open than the rest of the world. We are much more inwardly focused. More of our economy is based on demand from consumers and businesses here. But nonetheless, we're still connected.
Well, we got to leave it there. Mark Zandi, as always, thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you, and sorry for the reception.
Oh, that's okay. Not your fault. But we appreciate you joining us. And Mark Zandi, chief economist at Moody's Analytics. Let me just squeeze in a comment from Fiona, who says it's impossible to be hired back into a big consulting firm as a woman over 50. What could have been great bookends to a career ended up as random contract gigs to get to retirement. Fiona, thanks for your comment to Radio Times. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder and Paige Murray-Bessler. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you for joining us.